Good morning and welcome to the Lawrence Business Magazine, where we have in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. And today I am pleased to have legendary Lawrencean Mr. Hank Booth and radio personality here at the studio, and he's also one of our contributing writers to the Lawrence Business Magazine.
Honored to be a writer for your Lawrence Business Magazine. That was a proud moment when I looked there and there was a picture of me and two of my youngest grandkids right there.
We appreciate your one of the reasons we wanted Hank to be one of our contributors is because with getting a boomer perspective, and we were just talking, you are like the second year of the official boomer population.
There were boomer A's, and I think that's including five or six of the first years of post-World War II, babies born in 45 on through about 1960. And the boomer B's are that last half of that group, so about 55 through, or 50, 54, 53 through 60, about half and half. But we're the boomer A's, and we're hard at it now because there are a bunch of us, 10,000 per week, per day, being added to the total number nationwide.
That's incredible. I mean, this amount, the huge amount of population. But I want to talk a little bit about you as, you know, having been born and raised in Lawrence, how much you've seen, because I remember when I was a kid, when I came to, we come up to KU with my dad, who went to KU, and he graduated. He was part of ran to track at KU, and he was part of the, he graduated in 56. And he would always say, well, when I was in school, Iowa was a dirt road out this way, you know. And then when, of course, I came to school, you know, Castle was way out there, and Wakarusa was a dirt road way out there.
We used to go park and look at the stars out on what's Castle today. Yep, that was one of those country roads on the west side of town.
Yeah, and Coach Timmons lived down on Castle. I thought he lived way out of town.
He was way out there on the far west side. That's right.
He was a pioneer out there. So let's talk a little bit about growing up in Lawrence, because it's still a small town in so many ways, but it's grown so much. When you were growing up here, what was it? You know, you were growing up, and your dad at that point, was he already in the radio business when you were growing up?
Yeah, he had started the radio station when I was first born in 46. He worked for WREN, which was then still in Lawrence, Kansas. He had come back to work for WREN after serving his service time in the United States Army and was stationed in Hawaii. And he had met my mother during college days at Baker. Okay. And then they were married right about the time the war was ending, and they came back to the United States, and he was invited back to be part of the WREN crew of broadcasters, WREN, in Lawrence at that time, then moving shortly after that to Topeka when Governor Landon bought the stations and wanted them to be in the capital city.
Okay.
As he owned them, they were going to be in his capital, which he kind of considered his place.
He owned the town.
He moved them over to Topeka. And that's frankly what left the void in Lawrence for a radio station that my dad saw and thought we still should have a radio station.
Okay. So when did he start KLW? Then that was KLWN was what he started.
That's
then.
Right.
And
that's
when
right.
did he start that?
We had a short trip from when I was a little kid out to a town called Oroville, California, and that lasted a couple of years. He put a radio station on the air out there, and frankly, I think in part so he'd have that experience of starting a station from ground up, because he is already dreaming, and then with the support of his brother, Harvey Booth, who lived down near Baldwin, and was very active in Douglas County as well, and owned the grocery store and farm down by Baldwin. He had a little extra money, and he helped out, and Dad went around then when he left Oroville, California, came back to Lawrence and found the financial support from about a dozen men who owned businesses in Lawrence, and then he took that money and put the radio station on the air. It started, opened the door, first day of broadcasting, February 21st, 1951, but he started raising the money in early 1950, got it built during the summer and fall, and then on the air in 1951.
Now, I've heard you tell stories. Now, that's when the radio tower was out, like, past, 31st and and
Iowa Street.
Out there. Right, that's where the radio tower was then.
That's right. The tower and the building, the station building, were located right there, and many people who've lived here a few years remember it well, and it kind of grew there. It expanded. We had, I think, three or four major expansions onto the original concrete cinder block building, which was only about 40 feet by 50 feet, and it wasn't a big place. You didn't need a lot of room for those early day, it was called a daytime radio station. It was daytime only, in that it could only broadcast from local sunrise to local sunset because of interference and international treaties with the airspace on the dial. Okay. It could only be on the air from sunrise to sunset. And that was later given a fixed time of 6 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. And finally, a long time later, was given the opportunity to reduce power at a lower power than 500 watts, which is really already very low.
Okay.
And then that meant that we could stay on after we agreed to do that all 24 hours.
Oh,
but that
okay.
didn't come until the 1970s. So we got the 24-hour early 1970s, we were given the opportunity to go to 24 hours of broadcast.
Now, did the station stay at the 500 watts during the day and then go down at like 6 o'clock?
That's right. We went down from 500, I think, to whatever we are now, 150 something, as John might know. But I think it's about 150, 160 watts right in there. But the signal goes further at night.
Right.
Don't ask me why. But it does travel further at night, so it we still had basically the same coverage area at night that we did during the day.
I know I grew up in western Kansas, and we used to get, we would not get certain TV stations.
Sure.
Unless we had low cloud cover. Yeah, we had two stations, and then we could get ABC out of Wichita when we had low cloud cover. Or in the wintertime, you had more of a chance of getting ABC. Otherwise, we only got CBS and NBC.
That's right. And people talk to me now, and I talk about, boy, we were lucky when we had three stations to watch in Lawrence. Yeah. We could get two out of Kansas City and one out of Topeka. And they said, what are you talking about? Well, you know, they're just now talking about KMBC in Kansas City being 60 years old. Well, we were on the air 3 years before KMBC was in TV in Kansas City. So those were the early days of TV.
Now, when your dad started the station, and then you following in his footsteps later on when you started broadcasting, but what did, was your dad also, he owned the station, but he was also an on-air personality, right?
My dad did this
what did he do?
Radio program that I just finished every day, just as I have done it every day for a number of years since I returned from the Army. My dad did that and started the According to the Record radio program, I believe the first week that we started broadcasting, the very first times we were on the air, he broadcast According to the Record, which was a little different because then it focused on local birthdays all the time, local anniversaries, funeral services. We read the obituaries on the air. We'd interview people just as we still do today, local dignitaries and that sort of thing. And it was just kind of an extended newscast. It kind of took the same form as the Today Show was on television and some of those venues as it has over the years. We've removed some of the things we used to do during the According to the Record program, but it's basically the same. It's a focus on local people doing important things in our community and talking to them about what they're doing.
Okay, that's interesting. I had no idea that that had been
it's
going on.
It's been there since the very beginning, since the very first days.
That's great. Now, did your dad also when did they start broadcasting sports? When was sports part of it?
Well, the interesting thing was that back then, since we were a daylight station only, if KU played a nighttime basketball game, and they almost all were, we couldn't broadcast it in those early days of the 50s and 60s. We could not broadcast the Lawrence High School football games during that night that it was played on a Friday night. So we would have a crew that would do the game, record it, and then play it the next morning.
Oh.
And back then, pre-Channel 6 and TV, frankly, of even having a chance to be on television, a high school game never would have been on TV back in the 50s and 60s. We would rebroadcast the game with a fellow named John Weatherwax doing the play-by-play broadcast. Later on in the middle 60s, after I graduated from high school, I helped John. But those were always rebroadcast the day after.
Okay.
But Lawrence High football was so good that our old buddies from over in Topeka at WREN would come over and broadcast them live at night. They didn't do the Topeka station, the Topeka high schools. They did Lawrence High School. Of course, Lawrence High did a lot of playing with Topeka High School, right. Highland Park High School. I don't think we played Seaman then. They were much, much smaller, but we played Topeka and then later Topeka West, Topeka High School, and Highland Park. But they broadcast Lawrence High School from Topeka as their number one because they had a lot of advertisers in Lawrence that wanted to buy that. So one of the main reasons we got that 24-hour service, and frankly, one of the reasons why we added FM was to have nighttime sports coverage of our high school sports, Lawrence High, and our area schools, Baldwin, Eudora, Tonganoxie, particularly, and at that time, Perry and Lecompton, two separate schools then, so we could do nighttime basketball games and other football games that were important. So again, then, and to do KU sports.
Right.
KU basketball, of course, was huge. Those days in the 50s and 60s, and if it was a night game, we could not do it. And we couldn't even record those because they had the restrictions on being able to record it because the network did those. But then we were able to join the KU Sports Network with KLWN-FM when it signed on the air in 1969, 1970.
Okay. Now, because I remember then were you hooked up when you guys in the 70s, then did you part of the KU Network? Then did you guys, is that when you start broadcasting statewide and stuff? Was that coming from this? Centered from here?
There wasn't a statewide interest in the network shows, the Jayhawk Sports Network, the ones we hear now doing KU Sports. That didn't really start until this century. I mean, after the year, it started in the 1990s, actually, that there would be a statewide network.
Okay.
But they originated those programs from our studios since they began and through our broadcast facilities. So the coaches' shows in particular, Charlie Weiss' show now, Bill Self's show, when you hear those are being broadcast with our assistance in the middle to the statewide network headquarters, and then they send them out to all the stations on the network. But that's been our part, our role in that, almost from the very beginning of being able to broadcast the games, all of the games on KLWN-FM. And then later, KLWN, when we got the daytime and nighttime service approval.
That's funny, just the how things have
changed.
How
things have changed.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the radio station, but then also talk about how your involvement and how you've been, all the things that you've done over the years in Lawrence.
I want to touch base on something because a long time ago, I had a couple of broadcasting buddies who told me this FM thing is never going to last. And I can tell you about that. Okay.
1320 KLWN, radio you can depend on.
I'm here with Hank Booth, the legendary Hank Booth, and our contributing writer to the Lawrence Business Magazine. And we're talking about media history in Lawrence, particularly the radio history. And we were before we left, we were talking about the AM station. And then Hank wanted to let us know a little about that upstart FM stuff.
That FM stuff. Yeah, we started hearing about that back when I was in high school big time, and several stations in Kansas emerged as FM-only radio stations back in the late 50s and early 60s. FM had been around for many years, but then it really started to make a mark, and I use this as an example. KANU, the University of Kansas radio station, went on the air in part sharing time and through its broadcast facilities with WREN in Topeka.
Okay.
And they had another part of that station operation, KUOK, which was the AM part of KANU. That's a long technical story. Don't need to go into it. But they were joined in the early days as KANU started as an independent FM radio station back in the 50s. Then KLWN-FM finally came along as I was in the process of getting that license approved to add the FM.
Okay.
And at the time, only 17,000 watts, because you could have up to 100,000 watts of FM power because of the difference in how the signal is transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a direct line signal for the FM signal. Because of that, you have to have much more power to push that signal out, and we ultimately increased the signal from 17,000 to 100,000, but 17,000 watts would allow us to be on the air and broadcast Lawrence High School football and KU basketball games, and then if there were night games for KU football, those games, we could be on at night. The reason we went on at night with FM was football, and we were, a lot of what we did otherwise was music that was automated, music that was played out of a old-fashioned machine that you wouldn't even believe if had it around here was actually a piece of operating equipment. But it was automated, and we didn't really do much with it. Mm-hmm. And as I went to a convention, a state convention, I'm going to say in about 1973, okay, a couple of years after I returned from the Army to manage the stations, I was at a convention, and a great friend, longtime broadcaster, came up to the young whippersnapper, Hank Booth, at that convention back in 74 in Salina, and he was one of the top-notch broadcasters who had an ownership part and also managed KSAL, the big AM station in Salina.
Okay.
And he said, "Now, Hank, what is this thing I hear about you?" He called me Henry because they all knew me from the old days. "Henry, what is this about you getting that FM thing there on your radio station?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it's got a real future. I really do." I said, "It's dead. Why? It's dead. It's never going to make it. It's not going to be worth a darn." I said, "Well, it lets us do KU sports at night." "Well, there's the only reason you ought to do it." He wasn't the only one. There are other broadcasters, but I remember him in particular because he was a very successful AM broadcaster, mm-hmm, who in the next few years did open up an FM station, and I was glad to see it happen. But
now KLWN, that was both AM and FM.
That's right.
But then when did the FM turn? Then it turned into the Bull, right?
That's right. Well, we became at that time. Then when we made our move from KLWN, we became KLZR.
Right,
the laser.
Okay, that's right. That's what I remember when I was in college.
That's right. We were the laser, and that happened when we increased that power. When we went from 17,000 to a 100,000-watt powerful FM station, mm-hmm, built a new tower, did all those things we needed to do that, and that takes a lot of money, by the way, lot of cash to do that. We did that and went and became KLZR, the laser. And then during that,
what was that, like 70s?
Yeah, it was in the late 70s, early 80s. And
okay,
the early 80s, at that time, we were still automated a lot, but we, mm-hmm, still were playing a lot of new music, a lot of current, very current rock and roll back, mm-hmm, during those days. And it always had been the young adult station in the market. The KLWN was for the older listeners and the families and local news and all that sort of thing. And the FM was the music station. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it was with a lot of small market stations.
Right.
They had the FM to play music and the AM to be the news talk kind of format. But then KLWN hit on, at that time, we called it, it was underground rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Hot 106. We had the underground rock capital of the world here in Lawrence, Kansas. And we were playing all of the newest music, and some of it was pretty heavy-duty, hard-nosed rock and roll. And I went into calling the show I did at that time the Heavy 10-6. We were 105.9. I did the Heavy 10-6, and it was the heaviest guitar-ladenest songs I could find anywhere. And if it went bam, bam, that's why I'm hard of hearing today and being helped by my great hearing aid company. But that's another thing. I just tell you right now, playing rock and roll with those headphones on, if you see your kids doing it, tell them to stop because it'll mess them up. It really will. But we did. We played great old rock and roll. And then Laser, with the help of some great young programming minds that I was smart enough to hire, put the radio station on the national map.
Right.
Literally, because KLZR would attract national acts to Lawrence, Kansas to perform here because we were doing their music.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing their music on the radio first of any stations in the country, along with some of the top-notch, they called it album-oriented rock for a while. It went by modern rock for, mm-hmm, a while. It went for, again, it was all a lot back then. And then it became the newer, less hard rock,
right,
hard guitar to some of those songs that you remember from the 90s, mm-hmm, and that era of, and that genre of music. But we went through all those phases of being KLZR, The Laser, 105.9, and nationally known song station.
So when these, so the music scene, so The Laser helped really get the music scene on the map here in Lawrence. So when people came to, these bands came, where did they play at? Where were they?
Well, they played at the Red Dog, and they played downtown at some of those venues that were down there. I don't know that the Bottleneck was there. Maybe they were just getting started.
That's what I'm trying to
remember. But yeah, back in the old days of the Red Dog and all the different names that it had back during, that, of course, is Liberty Hall now.
Right,
and we've had names on that through the years, a number of different names. But they'd come to that venue, and some of them then would actually play in Topeka and Kansas City, but then be... The act would be brought to you by The Laser, because where signal was strong enough, particularly in Overland Park and through Topeka, that we could be a Topeka station as easily as we could be a Lawrence station.
Very cool.
When we tuned that signal up good, it boomed out there strong. And so we brought acts to Topeka, to Lawrence, to Kansas City. As a matter of fact, we were the modern rock or the alternative rock. Mm-hmm. That's the other name for it. Alternative rock stage sponsor at the big summertime music festival back in the 80s and in Kansas City. They're at the War Memorial.
So
if you remember those days, we had all those top groups from those days on our team, if you will, and they loved coming to Kansas City and being guests of The Laser.
Oh, how fun. So now, you got the music scene going here in the 80s.
We had it going big time because they were all coming to Lawrence, Kansas.
That's really interesting because I didn't realize how, and it makes sense that now that you say that, how much the radio station played a part in making Lawrence feel, you know, have that kind of hip music center that we still have today. How important that was to have the radio station be part of that, which makes a lot of sense.
And I have to say that that type of music, it stopped being original.
Mm-hmm.
It started being copies of the new music genre of that time. And the new music wasn't coming from there.
Mm-hmm.
It was coming from other newer sources as it went on into the 2000, year of the 2000 and beyond, 2005, 2010. It became different genres, became the new music, the new hot music. And it wasn't that modern rock or alternative rock so much anymore. And we had sold the radio stations, started the sale process in about 1998.
Okay.
And had the station sold then, I believe in 98 finally, and the Zimmer Radio Group bought it. And they brought in their consultants. A very difficult decision had to be made, and they studied it very, very carefully. And that was the decision to change the format from the alternative rock to this newer adult contemporary format that we have until with a number of different variations put into it. But that decision was tough, and there were a lot of people that remember the old 105.9, the Heavy 10.6, The Laser, Heavy, you know, all the different names we had for it back in those days in the 80s and 90s, and they kind of, whatever happened to it? Well, it kind of happened to what happened to your receding hairline and what happened to all that, because back when you were in college, that was the music of the day, but it stopped being, you know, there were only so many hits that, foreigners still putting out good music, but, you know, when we introduced some of those groups, it wasn't the same as Three Dog Night from the 60s and early 70s, but it was the same kind of thing. Those days faded, and the new evolution of music became something else entirely.
Well, radio stations, and that's one thing. Let's talk about the radio stations have changed over the years too. With the as we talked about, after you had the crazy FM, then you have now you have the internet.
That's right.
And I think it's going to stick around for a little while. Myself.
I think it's going to be here for a while to come, but I don't think it means the death of radio as we know it.
No,
you know,
it's definitely,
I really
different.
Don't.
I think it may. I think radio is evolving to match that, but as a lot of things become, when they become mainstream, these things to get more homogenized, and then you have that pull back and kind of that shift around of things. But let's talk a little bit.
Look, when I can get an email from a cousin in France saying how much he enjoyed listening to my show the other day, when he had a few minutes, he tuned it in, and I thought, that's a different audience. I don't think many people are advertising for our French audience these days. So
that is, it is fascinating how the reach can be so huge, but what the local aspect though of radio stations, which I think is one of the things that has made it so great is that it really does, you know, it's about, you can be local, you get local personalities, you get local people. I mean, the Lawrence Business Magazine, we can be on the radio, and you kind of have your local group, and then you have, you could have that reach with the sports kind of to a much larger area. But it gives, and it gives Lawrence, I think it's great for Lawrence to have a radio station too. The profile, you know, helps the whole, from the university, the town, the merchants. It's just a great thing that to have a local radio station instead of having stuff just piped in from everywhere else.
Back in the days when they were here as students in the 50s and 60s, my era of music and the generation of that era, we didn't play a lot of that until about 1965, 66, when I got out of high school and on into college, and we started playing it more. Mm-hmm. And we had a studio over in the Hillcrest Shopping Center that we played music in the front window there, and the junior high kids from West Junior High had come around and looked through the window. And a fellow named Johnny Hayes, spinning the records in there.
Oh my God.
So anyway, the bottom line is we've evolved. Everybody's evolved. You have to. Mm-hmm. It's part of the name of survival. And we in the generation that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, the boomers, we've really had to evolve. We've had to make some major evolutionary changes during the course of our 65 years on Earth. So, and they're going to continue to evolve, and we better learn what to do with them. Like, you're so patient with me with my internet use now. I'm going to get this right. I'm going to get it right. I'm going to get this computer thing down.
That formatting can be a problem.
Formatting is an issue. Yeah.
Our shop is a very Mac oriented shop, and then you have your PCs. We have a few PCs when we have to use them, but we tend to use the Macs because when you have artists and stuff, Macs are the thing.
Macs the thing. All right, I'm going to become a Mac-oriented guy then. I do enjoy writing for the magazine. I've enjoyed that very much.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about community and the boomers when we come back after the break.
1320 KLWN, radio you can depend on.
I'm here with Mr. Hank Booth, a radio personality and legendary Lawrencian.
And now, you keep saying legendary. I tell you, that makes me feel like a really old guy, see, and I'm not really old. I'm
just a kid,
really, in this boomer generation kind of thing. We're just kids, really.
Well, I guess it's probably, you are legendary. It's probably because, you also have your dad, so you've got history.
That's
so you're tied, deep into the roots of the community.
Go clear back to the early 1940s when he first started to work at WREN pre-World War II. That's right. So the name Booth has been on the radio in Lawrence for a lot of years.
That's right. So one of the things, too, I just want to let our listeners know that the Lawrence Business Magazine with contributing writer Hank Booth is published quarterly and available at the local Hy-Vees, the Merck, and other convenient merchants around town. And you can like us on Facebook, where you can also find out updates and information on the radio show and magazine. We'd love to get your comments and questions, but in our effort to keep it open dialogue, we ask that you put your name on it. So we...
I have to just make a personal plug. When I first saw it the first time, I thought, well, what is this? And then I got involved with that, and I think I sat down and made time to read it literally cover to cover, because it was doing some things and covering some things that, frankly, we just weren't getting a lot of. The kind of feature inside stories of some of the really important things going on in Lawrence in print, and I really appreciated that. I mean, we have a wonderful newspaper. We have a wonderful organization that takes care of the TV business here in Lawrence and that sort of thing. But to have that magazine style about Lawrence business was great. It was totally refreshing. And thank you guys for doing that. You and Mark Kern and your husband and Ann Frame Herzog right here wouldn't miss my issue. And now you want me to write for it a little bit.
Yeah, and we are having you write for it. And one of the reasons, because we really felt the boomers with such, we have a lot of boomers here in Lawrence. But also your kind of history with Lawrence, you have a great perspective having grown up here and seen the city evolve. But also, the boomer perspective, with just their, as you said, the 10,000 a day, the huge number, the group of boomers is such a huge demographic. And it's changed because as they've gone through the years, when they've kind of swept through our society, going from the children to the teenagers to the, families, just how they've kind of changed a lot of different things that we look at and do. So
we pushed gross consumer spending beyond all imagined whatever they thought it might be back mm-hmm. in the good old days after the Depression, pre-World War II, whenever they thought it could be so-and-so and get to so much, then mm-hmm. I think we've pushed that completely off the charts. And then, of course, when our parents came back from our dads mostly came back from fighting the war, and moms who'd been back here doing many things during the war years, mm-hmm. when they got together, they decided they'd have a nice big family and do it right away. And mm-hmm. that's where that boomer thing started from, the beginning of that boomer period right after World War II, and the parents that joined together after the war to create families. And now we're those kids, and all that we've produced financially, children-wise, now grown-ups themselves having kids, all that sort of thing, that's what the boomers are all about. So we're the kind of explosion after World War II of the babies that were born, the boom of babies born after World War II.
Now, is because just kind of getting back in a little history lesson and philosophically, too, the boomers having been born after World War II, they were product of children and people that have gone through the Great Depression, but they didn't really understand, hadn't really dealt with it themselves. And so the parents and the kids kind of, it changed. There was a huge shift, not only was the war, obviously, but as an economic thing. They had, these were kids that had not gone through the Depression, so they had a different view of things until, you know, so is that what, then that's when you said that consumerism, I think, began, mm-hmm. you know, as you said, economically, in the 50s when people started buying and, you know, wanted to invest in their families and kids.
I'm writing about that right now, and that is the fact that we became the disposable generation. Mm-hmm. Everything we got, when we were done with it, we tossed it. And
right.
the sooner the better. I mean, we gobbled up that TV dinner and tossed the package in the trash and didn't care another thing about it. We finished off that bottle of pop, and maybe we turned it in for the 2 cents, but then we got those tin cans, and we'd mm-hmm, drink yes. that pop out of those cans or out of those little bottles and toss it, you know.
Right.
I mean, anything we consumed, we usually had leftovers, mm-hmm. either the leftover food or whatever, and the packaging, and we just tossed it. It didn't matter. And now I think we're starting to get some feeling that we need to be part of cleaning that kind of mess that we've been making over the last 40 years, 50 years, clean that up a little bit. So we're trying to help with that, too.
So I realize that there are unlimited resources, but I also think one of the I want to talk to you a little bit about this because our time is narrowing here. But what with your generation, and I know you personally are very involved with the community, and that how important that is, and the radio station has always been part of the community. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how giving back to the community and being involved in the community. As a personally, how important that is to you, and because you're always advocating other people to get involved. So let's talk a little bit about that.
My father's number one lesson and his number one message in operating a community radio station, and it's something that goes for every business, it goes for every bit of work that any of us do in this town and anything that we're doing. We are in the business in this radio station of serving the community. As mm-hmm. as you go out there, as this community goes, so goes the radio station and our overall success in terms of being a communicating source within the community to mm-hmm. use for extending lines of communication, for opening up the airways for different opinions and different points of view and all of those things. But the bottom line is, you have to give back in order to be able to succeed in anything that you're involved with. I don't care. I had a wonderful, wonderful aunt, Annie Maud, down in Wellsville.
Okay.
And her number one line, you'll get back 1,000% for every 1% you put in. Or she had different ways of saying it. But you're always going to get 10 times, tenfold over whatever you put into something, you'll get 10 times back.
I know that's something that you always, you know, I have a 10-year-old son, and we always try to instill in him how important it is that you're part of the community. And honestly, that's part of when we started the magazine, it was to talk about people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence, that businesses are part of the community, and they need, and businesses themselves should see themselves as part of the community too, as how to, you know, from providing jobs to services. All the things that they do, they are part of the community, and that having both the people and the businesses seeing themselves as being part of the bigger organization.
That's why we grew up in this, and I grew up in this business, saying ours has to be the voice for the people that need the community shelter, that need just food, that need the United Way support that they get, that need these things, because we can be that voice that they don't have otherwise. Mm-hmm. We can be that outcry to people that says, we could use your help here because we're not getting along very well. We could use some help. Mm-hmm. And I think most people want to help others. I think most people are in the business of saying, we've got our family in pretty good shape. Let's take care of something else if we can mm-hmm. help. And they're leaders of scout groups or 4-H clubs, and they take care of the adult jobs involved with dance groups and gymnastics clubs and soccer clubs and, mm-hmm. and little league football or baseball or whatever it happens to be. And that giving back is a very American, very important trait in all of us, I think.
It is. And I want to, as you're giving back, and like you said, it is, I don't think until, you know, when people realize how much they give back, and I also think we also, as citizens in this town, need to not only, we also need to thank people.
Amen.
Sometimes Amen. I think we all, you know, take certain things for granted, and people that are helping out a lot, and we just, I think... the word thank you can never be used too much, and I think that's one of the things. And I want to thank you for all that you've done in this community and all that you've given back.
Just getting started.
I hope so.
Just getting started. Got years to go.
And, well, as you have been doing this magazine, this show, interviewing people, is there anybody that you haven't interviewed that you want to interview? I want to ask you a couple of things like that.
Somebody I haven't interviewed in a long time.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to get Bob Dole back on. I haven't had a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the greatest interviews I've been able to conduct were absolutely spur of the moment that I didn't have any clue it was going to happen that way. And there are questions I wished I'd asked, and I don't dare get started on that. I would love to have Barack Obama come in here and sit down and talk to us. And I'd love to have Barack Obama and Jim McCain sitting right next to him and interview the two of them. But more importantly, I think it's important, too, that we interview the Democrats and the Republicans in our Kansas legislature. And we do mm-hmm. do that. And it's important that we interview our people that are on the city commission and the county commission. And we do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. But I guess if there's somebody, I really think one of the most fascinating people in the world today is Barack Obama, the man that has basically been created out of an American society. And you look at all the history of his history and all the rest and what he has accomplished. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing story.
It is an amazing story. It's fascinating. And
whether you like Barack Obama politically or not, I think the man you have to admire. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
a little input there from
there's
from
a guy I'd like to
Mr.
interview
Matt
someday,
Llewellyn.
Matt Llewellyn, but you can't get a word in edgewise.
He has more energy than anybody else I know.
Absolutely.
But one of the things too, when you're talking about, you know, political figures are fascinating, and the job that the president of the United States has is
impossible.
It's an impossible job, and it's lately a thankless job, but. Hopefully, we keep moving forward our country, and we can get by some of the things that are holding us back.
You know the thing about Lawrence, Kansas is the best? We never stop asking questions.
That's true.
We never stop asking people to tell us why they're right and we're not right, or they're right and we should consider their point of view. We always ask those questions. A lot of people, a lot of places don't do it nearly as much as good old Lawrence, Kansas does. We like to question everything people are doing, wherever it is, whatever they're doing.
Then, and I think questioning is good, answering, getting people to actually answer
questions
is even better. We like the people to answer questions because we all, I think we've gotten kind of used to sound bites and having a little bit of a longer dialogue.
19 to 22 seconds, that's the max you're ever going to get. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we've got a little bit more than 19 to 22 seconds with
Me
Mr.
Too.
Hank Booth this morning, our boomer reporter for the Lawrence Business Magazine. And love the history of the station and its impact on this community has been great and continuing
Thank
as we
you.
Go forward. The Lawrence Business Magazine, you also can find it online at thelawrencebusinessmagazine.com. You can like us on Facebook for updates. Each Thursday morning here at 9 a.m., we follow Hank Booth's According to the Record, the long-established show I just found out that his dad started, with in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses that we've covered in the Lawrence Business Magazine and are making a positive impact on Lawrence. Thank you, Hank Booth. We will see you next, hear you next, you'll hear you tomorrow.
Actually, hear me tonight.
You'll hear you
Lawrence
tonight.
High School That's football.
Right.
Yep.
Lawrence High School football.
Live from the ODAC in Olathe.
All right. And we will be back next week, as we are every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. here on KLWN 1320, redefining the concept of business.